Welcome to another episode of Living Downstream. In this episode, we'll hear about off-trail exploration. My name is Ryan, and I am an AmeriCorps member serving as Umpqua Watershed's Environmental Education and Outreach Leader. We have Tony Cannon here. Tony is an off-trail explorer. Tony, thank you so much for joining us today. Tell us a little about your hiking experience. How did you first get into hiking? How long have you been hiking? That sort of thing.
That's a good question. It's been long enough that I don't remember when the first, what date it was. I remember when I was a kid, my dad would take me, camping a bunch and fishing. I don't remember so much on the hiking portion, but just being outdoors, and even just sitting at the campsite, around Diamond Lake and places like that, East Lake, and just being comfortable just sitting out in the forest. And then as an adult, probably mid-1990s, I made a friend, his name is Jeremiah Osborne Gowie, worked for the Forest Service. And him and I would just go up in the woods and, go to places. And sometimes there was a rhyme and a reason to it. And sometimes we're just walking through the forest, goofing around, thinking we were going to find something. And that slowly evolved. And probably by the late 90s, early 2000s, my dad and I would start hiking and exploring. And I remember he took me and my half brother Aaron to a way out, I think it was out by Fish Lake somewhere, these rock pillars, and he was looking at those and trying to figure out how to get to them and where exactly they were on the map. And so there was kind of, it kind of opened that door, like, oh hey, there's really cool stuff out there that isn't easy to get to and it's not always easy to find. And then simultaneously, Jeremiah and I would, he lived in Corvallis at the time and I lived in Roseburg. And so we would meet up like halfway between and just go on these, we just pick out the hardest thing we could figure out to do. We go like on Waterfalls Northwest, that website, and we would look for the ones with the red coat, don't go here, it's too dangerous. And so we would go for those, push our friendship and push our skills and grow. And so it's been kind of this evolution where it was just exploring, just to explore. And now it's more, as I've done it, for probably 15, 20 years, I got more pinpointed at it, especially as I have less time. And, I'm 20 years older. So you make sure you make things count a little bit more than maybe I did when I started.
Have you encountered anything especially dangerous off trail?
Yeah. So when you think of danger, the first thing that comes to mind is animals with pointy teeth. And for the most part, no. I've seen a couple bear, both of them from the car. The one of them was a black bear by Hemlock Lake, and it was the size of one of the grizzlies at, Wildlife Safari. It was just a massive animal. So it was so big and that I didn't exactly recognize what it was at first. I've seen a few mountain lions, two of them off trail, away from the car, just you and the cat. And they just all, the bears take off and run. Even the one bear that I saw, it was like 600-800. I mean, it was just a huge 600-800 pounds. It just took off and ran. The mountain lions, it was basically the same thing. They kind of hung around and watched, but they had no interest. Dangerous situations. Yeah. I think every time you go out, it's a dangerous situation. Even just driving along like Highway 138 or Little River, it's dangerous with trees falling. And so I think about it in those terms. Every time you leave the house, it's dangerous. And the further away you get, there's more danger and more, the chances kind of increase. As far as specific dangers off trail, nothing that wasn't probably my fault. There was one time I climbed, there was this creek, and it was basically one big sheet of bedrock, and I didn't know it until I started walking up it, and there was no rocks, there was no plants, there was nothing in it, and it was about a half inch, quarter inch of water. I thought it'd be a great idea to walk up it, and it went uphill at a fairly decent clip, and I didn't realize it at the time, but once I got partway up there, it's grassy on either side. I didn't realize that the grass was super thin, and it just wiped away down to more bedrock, and so this lip, coming out of it, to climb out, this lip was probably 6 to 8 feet tall. Well, if that was actual grass, you could climb out at any time. It's not. And so I got, 600 yards up there, and it got steep to the point where I couldn't go any higher because it was too slick, and I couldn't go any lower because I was slipping, and I couldn't climb out, so I was stuck. So then you have to get pretty creative. I think just in general in life, I'm pretty resourceful, outside the box thinker. And so I ended up taking my, I had like a fleece. It was thankfully during the middle of winter. I had a fleece jacket on, which I honestly never wear. I think that's the only time I've worn one. And I took it off and stepped on it and just slid my feet 2 inches at a time for 600 yards. And, you know, there's a point where you're just standing there and you're thinking, how am I going to get out of here? And all of a sudden your feet just start sliding. I didn't move. I didn't shift my weight. They just go. And so it was like 600 yards, and it took me about 45 minutes. Well, at the bottom, this is, you know, if you can imagine a big water slide, and at the bottom was a big tree and some rocks and stuff. And so you're going to be racing if you slip by the time you get down there. You know, it's, you might not die, but you're going to kind of wish you were. You're going to be stuck there for a while, at best. And so it was like this 45 minute kind of little battle. And yeah, I remember when I left, I took a picture of that, and I, you know, when I was teaching and I had a classroom, I put that on the wall, and people were like, oh, it's a really pretty picture. And I was like, that's not a pretty picture. That reminds me not to get in over my head. Yeah, I think anytime you're off trail, anytime you're exploring, it's, you know, injuries can happen at any point, and dangers can happen at any point, landslides.
Yeah, that's a good point. Like, you know, there could be dangers right outside our front door, or, you know, even in our own home. But yeah, how do we want to spend the time that we have?
That definitely does sound like a harrowing experience. but I'm glad you made it out okay.
Honestly, I wasn't scared or anything like that. It, like, something in my mind kind of clicked, and I just focused on, you know, being patient and getting out of there. And I never like celebrated or kissed the ground when I got back, you know. I just kept walking.
Just another day.
Yeah. And, you know, back to the home thing, I think I've hurt myself more at home than I have, you know, 15 or 20 years of exploring off trail. Injury-wise, I had to get 7 staples because I hit my head on a log. But that was on an old road. Yeah, I torqued my shoulder a few years ago. But that was just, we were just standing on a flat spot eating lunch, and I turned and stepped, and there were like, kind of like vine maple type limbs down, and they're wet, and I just stepped on it and just slid and smashed my shoulder, and it was nothing dangerous. You're standing there. So yeah, it's been, that part of it's been an interesting thing. And as you get older, you know, I'm 44 years old now. You realize that you heal a lot slower, and stuff hurts a lot more. And so you definitely take a little more time to not make some of those careless mistakes of youth.
I ended up starting you off with the dangerous things, but
yeah,
like some of the other things that you've like enjoyed about going off trail, and maybe why off trail as opposed to trail hiking.
Yeah. Why off trail? It's a good question. And, you know, there's good and bad with everything you do. And especially, you know, you're talking about something, it's a rigorous physical activity. No matter what athletic endeavor you do, there's a point while you're doing it, you're like, why did I choose to be a marathon runner? Or, you know, in high school, when I did track, and it's like, yeah, it's great being a sprinter, but gosh, it's a lot of running. You know, there's a point where you enjoy it. There's a point where you don't, and you have to make those bad times worth it. And so I think why off trail is, I just get really curious, and I think I'm a curious person overall. I always want to know why things are or what things are. And so I kind of have a very big growth mindset where I'm always learning stuff. And I think with hiking, you look off out in the trees, and this is when it started. You look off out in the trees and you wonder what's there, what's up that creek. Well, let's go find out, you know? And so there's a curiosity. And then, you know, when I was younger, I was an athlete. You know, I played football and ran track and played basketball. As you get older, you know, move out of school and, you know, you get a job, none of that stuff matters. A lot of ways you never stop being that person. And so I'm, you know, I have a strong competitive drive and no outlet for it. And I think part of what drove it is I had the ability and the desire, so let's go do it. And I think the other part with, like with trail hiking, I get really bored on trails, and I've noticed that my head just turns side to side looking for stimulus. I think the one thing with off trail where you have to worry about every step, and you have to worry about sounds in between your steps, you know, and are you going in the right spot? And, well, maybe this is the way I plan to go, but not the one I want to go once I'm here. And so there's this constant reevaluation and constant amount of just huge amount of stimulus comes in that kind of puts me at peace. And other people I know I've been out with off trail, it drives them absolutely insane. They just can't do it because of that type of stuff. So I think that's where the line goes. Not that I have a problem with trail hiking. And it's funny because I'm not an adrenaline junkie. You know, I'm definitely a homebody and I'm fine just kind of hanging out. So it's not like I need stimulus all the time. It's just when I'm out in the woods. We all go out for different reasons, and that all that, you know, doing the off-trail thing, it even while I'm out fighting brush, it puts me at peace. So the second part of your question was the beautiful part of it. I think next time I'm out, I'm going to kick myself for saying this, but I think all of it's beautiful. I think we have to enjoy, find ways to enjoy things we dislike doing. No one likes to fight massive amounts of rhododendrons to climb up a ridge. But if you like doing the other stuff, you better figure out a way to like doing the bad stuff. And I think that's true for everything in life, not just for, you know, for our hobbies. I find ways to enjoy the brush as much as you can. I think when you're out, you know, especially so like what I do now is I look for rock formations or waterfalls, and I go out to hunt those down. While I'm out there, you know, I'm looking for flowers and looking for insects and for salamanders, mushrooms, anything that can be interesting. And so it's not just the destination, it's all the cool stuff you find along the way.
Yeah, I feel like you're giving our audience some great life advice in addition to the info about your hiking experience.
I'm a school counselor, so.
That makes sense.
That's what kind of comes. I mean, before I started doing this, you think, oh, all the cool stuff has names and all the cool stuff has trails to it. And then once you start doing this, you realize that's definitely not the case. Sometimes even on the same creek, that there's a waterfall that everybody goes to. Well, a few miles up the creek, there's an amazing waterfall that no one goes to. And so for me, it's so rewarding because most of the time now I'm by myself when I go out. A lot of times you get that solitary experience. And so everything that happens, everything you experience is on your term. And for some people, they don't like that. For me, I do. I grew up as an only child, and we are what we are. So, but, you know, I go out with my dad a lot, too. I go out with my daughter now. She's 9.
Awesome.
Some of the places she's gone to, people are like, what? How'd she get in there? She's a tough kid. I think there's so many beautiful things you see, just like rock formations and waterfalls. But then, I don't know, there feels like a difference when you see a really pretty flower or you take a nice picture of a flower way out in the middle of nowhere versus when it's by the side of the trail. Because, I don't know, there's a part of me that feels like I earned it a lot more that way. And so it's, there's salamander. Finding a cool little salamander in a cave, I think, is the coolest thing. Saw one of those this summer, just totally unexpected. And some of that stuff, you know, where you're learning about science. We found a giant Pacific salamander, and it was like 2 miles, mile and a half, 2 miles from the nearest water source. And it was at the top of a ridge, very, you know, kind of down into this cave. And we're looking at cave crickets, and all of a sudden it's like, oh, hey, there's a, you know, giant Pacific back there. just kind of eyeballing us. And so, you know, so then I go home and I learn about giant Pacific salamanders and their life cycle. And I think a lot of the beauty to me comes not just from reaching that waterfall or seeing the cool stuff along the way, but also learning about the world that you just traveled in.
Yeah, I was thinking about, you know, when you were talking about if I had ever gone off trail, and I really tended to stay on trail growing up, but you know, I was comfortable near my grandparents' house, and my grandpa had shown me kind of how to get to this pond nearby. And so I just, sometimes I would test myself and see if I could find it, you know, on my own. And I remember there was this one time I was either in high school or college, and I was you know, trekking through, and I think I was ended up on a deer path, and a deer like crossed right in front of me, which was very exciting, exhilarating.
That's amazing. You saw it's so rare to see even a deer off trail. I was thinking about that the other day, maybe one. We saw it was off at a distance and it's super fleeting. I rarely see, no matter how quiet I am, stay in one spot for a while, I rarely see deer. Off trail definitely isn't for everybody. I think there's a physical skill set, and then you have to develop, you know, just a skill set of how to move through the forest. But then there's also that emotional skill set, you know, where the old track saying is nothing matters until you're out of breath and you have to keep going. You know, you can be as fast as you want until you run out of breath. And so I think, you know, like with off trail, you can have all the skills you want. You can be whatever shape you want. But when you twist your ankle or you hurt your shoulder, or all of a sudden you think you might be a little bit lost and you start to lose it emotionally, having that emotional skill set is probably the most important thing. Because there's been lots of times where I've been a little bit unsure of where I was at. Like, okay, stay calm and sort it out, as opposed to getting really upset about it. And I remember one of the first times I went off trail by myself, and I was off in the Coast Range and I was looking for a waterfall. I didn't tell anybody where I was going. I went down a road that I didn't know where it went. I had no idea where it was. It was when I was reading, I didn't know how to read a map very well. And so I drove down this road and I was in the complete wrong spot, and then end up walking, and I took a tumble down this kind of hill into this little canyon that hurt my collarbone. Collarbone still hurts. You know, this is 20 years later, collarbone still hurts. And as I climb out of there, you know, in pain and emotionally feeling bad because I realized how much I'd screwed up and I wasn't even in the right spot. And then it just started dumping rain. I mean, just incredible amounts of rain the last 10th of a mile back to the car. And I remember thinking, this isn't going to last unless I get a lot smarter, you know, and a lot better gear. And so, you know, everybody always asks how you get involved or how you start doing it. And it's just one step at a time. You know, there's people who do more extreme stuff than I do off trail. But even then, you know, I've done 10 miles in a day off trail. It's just a lot of work and it's a lot of skill and sometimes luck, but I don't know. I've been doing it long enough and I keep coming back. So maybe skill is a little more important than luck sometimes. So as far as the safety stuff, it is rewarding, but it is a lot. There's a lot to it. And you have to know your limits, I think.
Yeah, I was wondering, how do you find your way when you do get lost?
Yeah, this one comes with a disclaimer. You know, your mileage may vary. I definitely do things a little bit different than other people. And a lot of it depends on your region. A lot of the people I know that do a lot of this stuff are up on Mount Hood, which is a totally different experience than it is up the North Umpqua or the South Umpqua or wherever. And so there's the 10 essentials, you know, with the med kit and a paper map and all this stuff. I generally don't do that. In my experience, I've never really needed, you know, Band-Aids or anything, any type of med kit, so I generally don't take one. I have a GPS unit with a shaded relief USGS topographic map, which is the same one that you know, same as a paper map. And I just load up with batteries. And so I have 3 days worth of batteries with me usually. And then I think one of the most important things I bring with me is water. I have a hydration bladder with a Sawyer filter spliced in line. You can just dunk the water, you know, if I run out of water from home, I can just dunk my bladder into a creek and drink the water safely without using tablets or anything. It filters all that stuff out. So as long as you're near water, you have an unending water supply, which is really important because you can survive without food if something happens, you get super lost, or there's a landslide behind you and you have to figure out another way out of there. And so, as you know, as far as equipment, for the most part, that's about it, unless I need something very specific like a climbing rope or, you know, headlamps or whatever if I'm going into a cave. I know there's people that are probably cringing like, oh, you know, you need a paper map. I've only taken a paper map a couple times and I never really needed it. It just hasn't ever come in handy. And, you know, the map that's on my GPS unit is probably better than the paper map because it's shaded relief. And so you can see, it's easier to see the mountains and stuff. And it tells you exactly where you're at. You know, other than that, I take like pepper spray in case I come across a bear and you know, a mother bear and her cubs, or my mother cougar and her cubs. I haven't used much else than that. And honestly, I never used the pepper spray. So Yeah, I think the most important equipment you bring out there is your brain. And so I know that in my situation, I don't just kind of wander out in the woods anymore. I do a lot of homework and I do a lot of studying. I use lots of different types of maps. And so I don't just look at going from point A to point B and in and out. I try and have at least two, sometimes three different routes out, in case the way I'm going in, I'm like, I barely made it through there without dunking in the water. So I want to go out the other way and I already have that saved up before I go in. And I'll save screenshots of maps on my phone because I take all my pictures with my phone. And so I have that map system there with, usually a couple of different types of maps. Yeah. And so, I've noticed the last couple of years that I will go in one way and intentionally go out another just to kind of push myself, push that knowledge. And so I think it's important to have the physical stuff that you specifically need. I don't think there's anything wrong with people bringing paper maps. I don't think there's anything wrong with people bringing a med kit or, first aid kit. Don't treat it like an athletic endeavor. Treat it like a scholastic endeavor. Do your homework and put some thought into where you're going, what it's probably going to look like on the ground, and ways to get out.
Yeah, I think I kind of imagine people, going off trail and just being like, oh, hey, I want to go check this thing out. But, the way you're explaining it sounds so different, where you're really planning and researching and, getting a sense of the land ahead of time, making sure you're mentally prepared, having that wherewithal. Have you ever experienced the GPS unit, not working? I know you mentioned extra batteries.
Extra batteries, yes. So initially, the GPS it's a Oregon Garmin and an older one. It's been absolutely vital. And it really hasn't let me down, what I would consider let me down, just a couple times, out of, 50, 60 trips, 70 trips, 100 trips, whatever it's been. Just a couple times where it isn't 100% reliable, but it's still, even on those trips, it still came around 10 minutes later. It was just that point of annoyance where it's like, okay, where exactly do I want to go? And the compass is pointing in the wrong direction for whatever reason. So with the GPS, yes, the batteries are the most, I think having a good map, not just the base map, but there are some really good maps out there. But the batteries are the most important thing. And another lesson learned, don't skimp on the batteries. We went into the Devil's Staircase, which is its own harrowing nightmare of off-trail exploration. And my batteries that I was using, I had three sets, but they're all really old. They're just like rechargeables out of the TV remote. So you get in there part ways and there's a spot, the route we go, where there's two trails, two little game paths to the left, one to the left and one to the right. And the one to the left feels like it's the right direction. And it looks like it's the right direction. And each time I'd been there successfully once, and the next two times my battery started dying right there at this spot. And the second time I came home, I told my wife, I said, I need new batteries. But, since we got the new batteries now, like I said, they last forever. But when, the batteries go down, then what do you have? I think having something in your hand and having a lot of stuff in your brain are really important.
Yeah, I feel like knowing the terrain, whether it's researched ahead or just kind of know the area, is so important because, if you don't have that technology to help or, something happens, you need to go a different way, like you said, you can more easily find your way out. I don't think I would have done when I was younger, wouldn't have done off-trail exploring anywhere other than near my grandparents' house, but I knew that area right. So well. I'm pretty geographically challenged, so I feel like if I didn't know the area, I would have felt really uncomfortable or very lost, so.
The ability for directions it's in our brains, the spatial reasoning. Studies show that men tend to have better spatial reasoning than women. It's not 100%, but.
Yeah, my boyfriend definitely has a lot better geospatial, reasoning than I do. And he'll have been in area once. And I mean, he does study maps ahead, kind of like you said. But even in areas where he didn't do that, he's like, okay, well, we made this turn, and so that was the wrong turn. We have to go back this way. And I'm like, wait, aren't we going that direction? You know, yeah. It's very, very tricky for me, but he's got it down.
Yeah, I think knowing your area is really important, and that's something that I've worked a lot on, especially now. There's a type of map out there called LiDAR, which kind of peels away the trees, and you just look at the ground and the rocks. And so I take screenshots of that, and honestly, I've use that more recently than I do the GPS. Just navigating off a screenshot of LiDAR on my phone has been more useful than a topographic map.
Are there specific places you recommend for people who might be interested in hiking off trail?
So my general rule, you know, when you're at a place and it says don't go off trail, there's a sign that says that. 99.9% of the time I listen to that. And so we'll go to places that are pretty touristy, you know, as a family. And I stick on the trail as hard as it is. But, you know, like out in the national forest, it's public land, and it's, for the most part, it's open for exploration. Generally speaking, most of the time, if there's a sign that says don't do it, then I don't. But the rest of the time, you know, if it's in the national forest, you can generally walk there. But I think the times that everybody gets annoyed is when you're at a touristy, you know, place where a lot of people are, and then people are ignoring those signs. That can be a bit annoying. You have to kind of know what's socially responsible. And I think there are points when you're off trail to recognize when places, it's not very good if feet go. Especially, you know, really kind of tender riparian areas with lots of water. I think you have to be pretty deliberate on how often you use, if you go back to that place multiple times, how often you use that particular route, how many people you bring with you, how many people you tell about it, you know, and just be very deliberate about how you go through some of those areas and not just kind of trash it. You know, even climbing up a little hill, sometimes it's not worth the damage you're going to do to the environment if you can't do it without making huge foot streaks. And, you know, just take a couple extra minutes of tender care, or, you know, care of how you step. I just think we have to be careful about, in sensitive areas, think about the damage that your feet, you know, footsteps are making.
Yeah, I was thinking about, yeah, like sensitive or endangered plants. I did a different position of AmeriCorps before this in Vermont, and we were learning a lot about the impacts of humans on sensitive plant areas and sensitive ecosystems. So that's a really good point to bring up, that, you know, if you're going to go out, especially off trail, like, be really mindful of how you do it, both for your own safety and for other living beings around you.
Yeah, especially with the fragile ones, you know, like with ferns, because they can get pretty big. And, you know, if you're doing off trailing and you're having to walk through, you know, a bunch of vine maples or rhododendron or salal, those things are pretty hardy. But things like ferns and mushrooms, some of the grasses, some of the flowers. And so, like, with those big ferns, I don't just step down. I kind of slide my foot along as best as I can and kind of get under and then go, just so you're not just stomping through everything. I've seen that a few times, and usually not the people I'm with, but just, you know, if you're watching like some of these YouTube hiking shows, I really don't watch them a lot, but you know, you just that's the first thing I see is like, oh, they just stepped right through about 15 fronds. They just killed that plant. And some plants can't take any disturbance at all, like trilliums can't. If you hurt one part of a trillium, the whole thing dies. So yeah, you know, in every rock you flip over or you move, there's creatures that live there. I try and be mindful of that stuff.
Is there anything else that you'd like to share with our listeners?
You know, I think it's great when people go out and explore the woods on, you know, for the needs they have and on their terms. And I think for some people, exploring, you know, going out hiking is going to Susan Creek, or it's, you know, kind of simple, almost paved trails, or, just kind of driving along 138 or, you know, going to Salhemqua Falls. I think that's fabulous. You know, for people just doing whatever they can to get out and enjoy the environment. Think about what you mean in the middle of it and bring those feelings back home. I think a lot of times, especially in our area, there's a disconnect between enjoying the environment and you come home and you feel sometimes a different way about it. You know, I've been out with family members and them just going out and standing by a creek right off the sidewalk is hiking. And I think that's great. Everything doesn't have to be centered around hardcore off-trail exploring or canyoneering, you know, or some of this crazy stuff that some people do, including me. But just finding a way to enjoy, you know, our national forests, our public lands, and finding, you know, personal value, and then also understanding the value they have once we get back home, the importance they have to us there too.
If you're interested in learning more about LIDAR or light detection and ranging, which Tony mentioned in his interview, you're in luck. On March 29th at 6 p.m., the Umpqua Watersheds Wilderness Committee is sponsoring an online presentation on how you can use this technology to safely and accurately explore new places before you head out into the woods. To register, just visit our website, www.umpquawatersheds.org. You'll then receive an email invitation with the information on how to join the event. As both of our interviewees in today's episode mentioned, it's important to know before you go. Be informed before you head out into Oregon's wild places, and our upcoming presentation on March 29th can help you prepare for your next adventure. Now we have Jeremiah Osborne Gowie, who grew up hiking in and around Douglas County and who now lives in Colorado. Can you start off by sharing a bit of your background? How did you first get started with hiking?
Yeah, I grew up in a family that spent a fair bit of time outdoors. So to me, it was just always from earliest memories, part of something that we did was always walking along river trails and to swimming holes or, you know, walking along cow pastures and meadows, trails, game trails, that kind of stuff. It was just something that was part of what my experience was as a young person. So it seemed just natural for me to continue on with that as I grew up. I had a family who loved to hike, loved to camp. Part of the family loved to go hunting and fishing. So a lot of my experiences were in the outdoor environment doing these kinds of things that often required us to go places. Or if we were at campgrounds, we would often go for hikes and just go exploring. So that's how I got started was really with my family, both parents and an extended family, aunts and uncles and grandparents, taking me out in the woods hiking.
That's great. Yeah, I've been hearing a lot of people have been kind of echoing, you know, early childhood experiences and how those experiences kind of propel us into a life of loving the outdoors. So that's very encouraging for those who do spend time with kids outdoors and hopefully encourages people who are not to do so.
Yes, I think there's a lot to be said for being brought up in and experiencing these kind of things and for help drawing others into these spaces. So whether you grew up in it or not, but being encouraged and to find the wonder, the marvels of the outdoor environment and interacting and engaging in it in a way that can sometimes be a little frightening, can be, you know, tests our skill limits and pushes our comfort levels, but you can find so many amazing experiences out there. And I find that when my senses are heightened outdoors, the experience is even more magnified that I have outdoors, whether I'm sharing it with others or by myself or, you know, just looking at watching birds and listening to their bird song or just listening to the sounds of a river.
Yeah, I've heard that you and our other guest on today's episode, Tony Cannon, have gone off-trail exploring together. What exactly does off-trail exploring entail from your perspective, or where do you go and why?
We are really fortunate in the Northwest to have such a network of trails that people have put in from clear back, you know, before the CCC days, Civilian Conservation Corps, a ton of trails put in during that era. And moving forward with federal agencies and state agencies having multiple municipal mandates to have multiple uses on these properties. So we're really fortunate to have access to so many different trails out there. And that really can get people started engaging the natural world. It's also a lot of fun to not do trails, or maybe start off on a trail and then just dive off and go someplace else wherever, you know, you feel compelled into. Maybe you see a particular draw that has dappled sunlight coming into it, and there's lush ferns growing in a, you know, a little babbling brook coming through, and you want to see what's up there to go exploring off trail. So that's how, you know, for me, I get drawn into those spaces. Also growing up as a hunter and a fisherman, we would just, you know, you want to get to a particular piece of the river, you just bail off of the top of a ridge, or you park somewhere and you just head down the river, or you're hunting out in the woods, you just wander around. Tony and I have had a lot of experiences doing different trails together. And even when I moved out of Douglas County area, moved up to the Corvallis, we would still get together routinely and go hiking. And often it would be either starting at a trailhead, but then as we started hiking more and more and got more comfortable knowing each other and what our comfort level was with each other and the spaces we were in, we started doing more and more off-trail stuff. And Tony just loves waterfalls. And I love being outdoors, and I love being with Tony and sharing different experiences. So I got to learn a lot about different waterfall stuff. And I had experience with it already as a fish and wildlife biologist, as a technician, and then a biologist doing a lot of stream surveys. So I got to had a lot of waterfalls that I could tell him about. And then he would want to explore more. And he started doing a bunch of looking on maps and stuff and finding these things. And it just was a passion of his. And so we'd say, let's go hiking. Let's go find these things. And we really enjoy our time together outdoors, and in particular, off trail, because it's the challenge of trying to figure out how do we get where we would like to go. And there have been many times where we've been rebuffed. We've been turned back going in hiking and realized that was not the way to go, even though we thought we'd planned it well. Yes, off-trail hiking is a lot of fun. You can do it on most public lands. There's some places that are some public lands where they really encourage you to stay on trails, especially those that have high use areas, in part because they don't want thousands or tens of thousands of footfalls going off on rogue areas that wind up creating problems for erosion, or maybe they're nesting areas for a particular bird, or it's a calving area for some game species that is managed out there. So there's reasons why we have trails and why it's a good idea to stay on trails in some areas. It's also, I think, a really good idea to get off trails and push your comfort level with things and just explore, just wander, just go do things.
That's great. Yeah. Thank you for sharing. So I guess, do you have any tips and tricks for finding your way? Like you mentioned, you know, trying to figure out how to get to something, but I feel like I would lose my way trying to get back to the car or whatever I'm trying to get back to.
Sure. Sure. Yeah. And you can get turned around. I get turned around routinely, even though I think I have a pretty good sense of direction. A lot of that's been honed over the years with just, you know, spending time out in the non-built environment in natural areas, just exploring and wandering. And particularly for hunting, that's been a really good way for me to engage in off-trail type activities and know that I need to get from this point to that point over there that I can see that might be 5, 6, 7 miles. There's a number of ridges between here and there. So how can I orient myself to make sure I'm going that direction? My grandfather, Glenn Gowie, helped me learn a lot of those skills from hunting, being out and about and hunting. My stepdad, Ty Roland, did as well. And my dad, who loved hiking, still loves hiking, mountain biking and that kind of thing, helped me with that through scouting and learning all that kind of stuff. So I started early on with orienteering and learning about how do you take maps and where you would like to go with where you are and looking at terrain, you know, on a map, and also just looking with your eyes to see what you're looking at. Because it might be that you see some kind of a topographic feature, a cliff face or a, you know, big rock spire, and you're interested in it, but it may not be the best place to hike. It may be interesting to go up and look at it, but it may be difficult to get around. So maps early on were something, and I still love maps. I mean, I own way too many maps. And even though we live in a digital age, I still love to pore over my paper maps. It's just, there's something fun, not only just nostalgic about it, but just to look at and think about, what does that look like? I see topographic lines that mean something in steepness and slope and aspect, but on a landscape, it could look very different. It could be, you know, a big Devil's Club thicket that you're trying to get through, which Tony and I have had experience when we tried to hike into Devil's Staircase the first time. We really got ourselves into some vegetation that made it difficult for us to keep making our way through. we eventually did it. I think our second or third try, we made it in there. And then we've been back a handful of times since to that. So maps is one thing I love to look at and love to pore over. And so the skills of learning how to read a map and what does north up mean? How do you take a compass and get a bearing for where you want to go that direction? But then there's lots of things in the landscape too you can check out. You can look and see, like I mentioned, you might see a spire of rock, a chimney of rock. And if you know that's, you know, sort of on your, at your 2 o'clock as you're looking and you're heading that direction, but you want to keep it on your right-hand side a little bit, then every so often when you pop up on a ridge, you can look and see, orient to, where's this particular feature on the landscape that I'm looking for? Or maybe it's a mountaintop. Maybe you can see, you know, Broken Top or Sisters or something, the Diamond Peak or whatever, as you're hiking out there. You can keep those on the same, you know, on the same side, your right hand, left hand side, you know, behind you, whatever. And so it's just always looking around. I like to look down. I like to look up. I like to look around. There's all kinds of things like that. Having a good GPS is helpful. When I was doing work early on with Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife, we had the early like decommissioned military GPSs that were huge. And they don't like a whole backpack. It would take up an entire backpack for this GPS unit with a big antenna sticking out the top of the back of it. And they would get us pretty close to where we were going. That was the early days of using GPS for sort of like public consumption, public good. As we've gotten much, much better GPS units and stuff, I mean, our phones now we can do so much with to find ways around. There's so many great apps out there you can use on your phone to help you track different kind of stuff. So I use a combination of a bunch of things. I sort of, it's not really a dead reckoning. It's as pilots might say, it's more of a, you look at something on the landscape, you know what you want to go to, you kind of make some marks in your head on what those landscape markers are. I look at my maps routinely. I might pull out an app every once in a while, look at it if I know it's a good app. But those are the kind of things that I often do for wandering around, because it's easy to get turned around. Sun direction is a big one too. I also like night hiking. So let me get back to the sun for a second. Sun, keeping the sun, knowing about what time of day it is. I mean, you know, any time of the day, I can usually make a pretty good guess about what time of day is based on where the sun's at. And even if it's cloudy, you just kind of have a sense for those things. But learning to be attuned to those kind of natural rhythms and patterns and cycles has been super helpful. I love night hiking. So you can't really orient to the sun for night hiking, but you can orient to the stars and different constellations, which is really neat to do. You can't orient so much on the landscape, although you might be able to see, depending how much starlight or moonlight's out, you might be able to see a topographic horizon line and be able to tell like, oh, that's the ridges. And right, I see that feature. That one looks like it's gently sloped with a big cutoff on the right-hand side. I want to keep that one on my left as I'm heading this direction. Tons of fun. Just some of the different tools that I use for orienting and navigating both in nighttime and daytime while I'm hiking off trail. But it is important, I think, to have a good sense of things. Just to go wander off, I think, can be problematic, particularly if you're not used to being in the woods.
Yeah, when I was teaching middle school science, I really enjoyed teaching about topographic maps. And I think it was just inspiring to watch the students as they kind of understood, oh, okay, this is a 2D representation of a 3D thing, right? Mm-hmm. And then we would make models and that kind of thing. And I don't know, just to be able to understand what the lines represent and to make their own topographic maps. Yeah, I liked doing it, and it seemed like the students really enjoyed it. So yeah, I can appreciate, you know, the paper mm-hmm. maps as well.
Yeah, not everybody gets maps too. Being able to read a map, orienteering and orienting on a map can be difficult, because as you mentioned, it's that 2D representation of really a three-dimensional environment. And sometimes making that conceptual leap can be particularly difficult to do. You know, some people are just oriented very differently, you know, maybe much more visually or tactically. I mean, really, for me, it's a relying on a whole bunch of different kinds of senses. You know, one of the things I rely on is particularly in hill country or mountainous terrain, is that in the morning times, the winds, as the sun rises and warms the air, the air rises. And so you'll have updrafts and gullies. And so you kind of just, I'm always, what direction is the breeze going? And some of that comes from hunting too, and being aware where my scent trail might be relative to the animals I might be trying to stalk. But and then in the evenings, as the air cools, the air basically moves down the gullies and down the hills and valleys, and just being oriented to those kind of things. All of those senses for me come to bear when I'm out hiking. I mentioned that my senses were fairly heightened, and it just feels that way. It doesn't feel exhausting. It's it's if after a while it feels more natural to be attuned to all those kinds of things. Where do I feel the breeze on what side of the back of my neck, or is it on my front, the front of my face or my cheek? Listening to calls of animals and learning that certain calls are alarm calls and other calls are maybe calling for mates or staking territory or just letting other critters know your territory is there. But just being attuned to all those kinds of things is something that I do when I'm out hiking.
Yeah, it sounds kind of like an exhilarated awareness, you know, like really, like you said, attuned to the environment and using your senses to navigate. You've mentioned this a little bit, but yeah, what are some of the interesting things that you've seen or noticed or maybe stumbled upon while out exploring?
Well, one is just a self-realization. So just kind of riffing on the question we were just talking about, and with night hiking in particular, like when my headlamp is on, if I'm hiking in the dark, and my partner and I hike every morning and throughout the wind, you know, all year long, but we hike early in the morning. Oftentimes it's dark for the time of year. Sometimes our headlamps are on. When our headlamps are on, I've noticed that like my focus tends to be, you know, you were talking about hyper awareness of senses. My focus tends to be very narrow, almost as narrow as the beam of the flashlight. I may be hearing other things. I may be smelling other things, feeling a breeze, but it's less attuned to that and more attuned to whatever is in that headlamp beam. And when I turn off a headlamp beam, it's amazing how my senses totally change and they open up. Instead of me being super focused on where that beam is and where my footsteps are, I'm still paying attention to where I go. I don't want to roll an ankle, but the awareness, the senses get as a heightened level of awareness and expansive. Like it totally opens up. All of a sudden I'm much more aware of tons of other things around me. So I've taken to hiking without a headlamp. I always have it with me and extra batteries. I want to be prepared if I need something, or if I find a mine shaft and I want to go exploring that or whatever it might be. But tend not to hike in the nighttime with light anymore, just because of that opening up of awareness. So what are some other things that I found while hiking? Gosh, it's pretty fun to run across old like mine shafts. Old, I mentioned, you know, if you come across a mine shaft, there have been so many times. I mean, Douglas County, there's mines all over the place out there. And many of them you can still find on maps. You find a little sort of pickaxe and shovel cross hatch looking on a map. And so there's many times I've wanted to go and just hiked into places like that. But often I don't know that those things are there if I'm hiking out for a different purpose. Maybe I'm doing a wildlife or a habitat survey or something like that, or I'm just out for a lovely hike. But you can run across those kind of things and you can look for markers. You might see, for instance, like water seeping down a mountainside that doesn't have an established gully or a channel in there, but there's water seeping through it. And you can see because of the vegetation, you might be able to smell it. Often those things come out of mine shafts. The mine shaft is, you know, tapped into the water table at some point, it's filled up and it's running out. So then I just start following those things. Where does this go? And then you might come across a mine shaft. So finding things like that, I found mine shafts that had still old narrow gauge rails in there with ore cars, still with ore in them sitting in mine shafts. I mean, that's an amazing thing to come across out in the woods. I live in Colorado now, and there's a lot of mining history here in Colorado. So we often come across different mine shafts, whether they're sunken holes in the ground or the old timbers for the entranceway, or perhaps some of the foundations and platforms they built outside of the mine shafts. It's just really awesome to come across those things when you're out in the woods. I come across shed antlers a lot, particularly in Oregon. When I was out there a ton, you know, deer drop their antlers every year, and the critters, chipmunks and stuff, will get to them for the nutrients and for the minerals and whatnot, so they'll chew them up pretty good. But you can often find those things out there, and I found so many shed antlers. That's always fun. It's just like a, whoa, this is awesome, look at this thing here. And finding that kind of stuff. Find gemstones occasionally. You know, we've been hiking in central Oregon in the Cascades, and you can find thunder eggs. You can find agates walking along streams or along the Oregon coast. So those kind of things are just so much fun to come across those things, but also just to marvel at like a little colony of tiny mushrooms that look like they could be big trees for a fairy or something like that. I mean, it's so neat to come across different things. Maybe nurse log, a big log that's fallen over, and a ton of other plants, shrubs and trees are growing out of that log. And who knows how long that is. So just to wonder and marvel at, like, could that be a 200-year-old log laying there? Could it be, you know, who knows? I don't know. And how long ago did that tree, was it a seedling? Often come across wildlife, all kinds of stuff. I mean, birds, ungulates, foxes. I mean, the other day, my partner and I were out for a hike and we came across an ermine, and I had not seen an ermine in Colorado before. And it was just this snow white with black little beady eyes. And it was actually in an old homesteaded, rock stacked wall that somebody had tried to eke out a living in a little field and stacked a bunch of rocks up right at the base of this mountain into a fence line, a rock fence line. And that ermine was in the fence line, using it as, you know, presumably a place for him or her to, den up and maybe to, you know, keep away from predators. Just coming across those kind of things is so neat. Watching, coming across a couple of bucks that might be fighting. For territory and for their harem. I mean, it could be just coming across a tree that looks like it's out of place because of the size relative to the other trees around there, and just marveling at amazing vegetation out there. There's just so much to go across out there. And maybe that's what it is, Ryan, is that having a sense of curiosity and wonder and just like, whoa, this is awesome, for me is really fulfilling. And that's one of the reasons why I love being outdoors.
Yeah, I love your enthusiasm. It's great to hear.
Like I mentioned, there's so many different trails out there. So even just getting on a trail and wandering around is a ton of fun. I mentioned sometimes it's, you know, your curiosity gets me, and I see maybe some lush ferns up of a sort of a semi-wet draw, and it's off the trail, but I want to see what that looks like. Might go explore up there. So if you're just starting to start thinking about off-trail stuff, it's often a way that you can test your limits a little bit, test your comfort by maybe you walk up that draw, but then you just turn around and come right back to the trail. You know, maybe you're only off for 10, 15 minutes. Maybe you're off for an hour, but then you come back the same route you went in. You stay in that draw, so you know nothing's gonna change, and you know you're gonna come back out the same place you left in. That's an easy way to test yourself and get yourself feeling a little more comfortable about it. You know, the Umpqua Trail has got all kinds of, it goes up and down the North Umpqua, but there's all kinds of little spurs you can take off from those things. You can wander off the trail and down towards the river, a little closer to the river. Parts of that Umpqua, North Umpqua Trail are fairly perched above the river. So maybe you go and walk the river for a bit and then come back to the trail. Those are good ways to start doing off-trail stuff. Another one is, if you know there's a big meadow out someplace, you can just wander through the meadow to the edge of the timber and then back again. That's a great way to do it. I think another benefit of walking off trail is that you feel more of the earth under you, the ground under you. Walking on a trail for very good reasons are often compact gravel or rocks in there and good footholds and steps and that kind of stuff. It's just a little bit harder on the body as you're walking. If you're walking off trail, you can feel the thickness of the decaying dead vegetation under you, or the living mosses underneath of your foot. There's plenty of areas where there's sensitive vegetation. For instance, at high altitudes where stuff takes a long time to grow, walking on tundra can leave your footprint can leave a lasting impression. So I try to be cognizant of those kind of things and walk along creek beds, maybe at high altitude where there are sensitive plants. But just being able to walk through the woods and feel the softness of your footfall out there is something.
I was thinking back to the night hiking, and yeah, when I had my sixth graders, we would go to up in the Adirondacks in New York State, and we would go on a night hike. But yeah, it was so interesting to experience myself as an adult, but also see the kid or hear the kids, and just kind of their experience and their reflection on the experience of what it's like to not use one of our most dominant senses of sight. And so we would, you know, we tried something out where we're each given a crayon outside, but like while it was dark, and we had to draw on a piece of paper, and you had to like look at it. You can't really see it because it's dark out, and try to figure like your guess, you know, like, oh, I think this is a red crayon or whatever.
Which is hard to see at night.
And then like we put it in our pocket. Yeah. but then yeah, it's like we go around and we cup our ears. The deer ears, and see what we can hear, and just like be really attuned to the other senses. And then we go back and see what color was the crayon actually. Oh, it was actually green. You know, something.
Yeah,
like
that's neat.
What are some recommendations you have for people who would like to try off-trail exploration?
One is to plan ahead, really plan ahead. Know where you're going to go. And if you're going to do a little bit off-trail, start small as a way to build up confidence and gain sort of some traction, some purchase on what you're doing. Another thing is let people know where you're going so that if you do wind up wandering off, you can be found again. Maybe at least people know where to go. So if something were to happen, maybe you broke a leg or you twist an ankle and couldn't get out, at least people know where to start looking for stuff. So that's an important one there. Much of the time I go with a partner, I just love sharing these experiences with other people in the natural world. And B, I just find it more fun to be outdoors with people. But if I'm going, so partnering up is a really good thing to do, especially if you're just starting to do off trail stuff and gain some comfort and really go with a couple of people so that you can support each other. And if somebody twists an ankle, somebody may be still able to go out and get help. Plan ahead, tell somebody where you're going, go as a couple of people kind of a thing to do it, and start shorter forays for the off trail stuff. And maybe they're just outbacks, they're easy outbacks down to the river and back up the trail, or up a draw or a canyon and then back down again. Things that won't take too long and start limited time. Good footwear is another thing too. I don't know that, you bump across people on trails who may have all the latest gear and everything like that, but gosh, I've been hiking so many different times and come across old timers who are still in jeans and, like a logger's flannel shirt, and they do just fine. That's how they've always hiked. And they're in, tall leather boots. That works great. No problem there. I do find that, particularly for hiking, when you're off trail, you're often side hilling. So it's not a flat place to plant your foot. So you have to be careful with your ankles being turned or twisted. So a good pair of shoes that has some good ankle support, and your feet don't feel so tired when you're done. I mean, if you come back and you're totally worn out, not in a good way, and your feet hurt, and maybe you've twisted an ankle, you may be disinclined to do that thing again. So if you've got some decent footwear, but really you don't need fantastic, walking sticks and all the high-tech gear and that kind of stuff. Heck, I mean, just grabbing a dead branch is a fantastic walking stick out there. In fact, they kind of grow on you a little bit. Like, oh yeah, this, you get the feel of your hand in a particular spot. You can flip the stick over. Maybe it feels differently with the weight and balance, that kind of stuff. But so good footwear is another good one to be out there with, I think.
Well, thank you for all the great recommendations. And like I said, your enthusiasm is infectious. So hopefully will inspire people to get out and in a smart way, like you said. Yeah. So I thought that was a good point too about, letting someone know where you are going to be, especially if you're not going with someone else and if you're new to it, but even if you're not new to it. Like letting someone know, cause you want to be safe. Right. And then also being aware of your impact on the environment. Sometimes there are reasons to not go off trail, and that could be, to preserve some sort of animal or plant habitat. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's also really exciting and invigorating to go.
And there's a lot of places you can see off trail that are, Tony, and I have done a whole bunch, and he's continued to do hiking out there in Oregon, finding amazing places that, few people have ever seen. And there's just so many places. Many trails go to really fantastic features on the landscape to see, a big tree or a waterfall or a particular stretch of river or whatever it might be. There's so much other amazing stuff out there to find. I've hiked the Calmeopsis wilderness both for work, and then my dad and I did it. We wanted to see the Calmeopsis plant down there, which only flowered one particular short time of the year, and it's an endemic species. A species grows nowhere else in the world, and that was a really fun hike to do. And we went and saw, I also got to fish. I love fishing. I packed a rod in there, and hiking was so great. We went to old mining stuff in there. There's just so many fun things to do, hiking and being outdoors. There's been a lot lately, especially during this COVID time, about that we're loving our natural places, our wild spaces to death, and that there's, people are longing for something to be there other than just in their home and a connection to something greater. And I think being outdoors is a fantastic way to do that. We can do that responsibly, I think. Sure, there's going to be more use, and sure, budgets are being cut for agencies and stuff for being able to maintain these things. So, picking up trash when I'm out there, I often have, a couple trash bags and small ones. And I just keep, if I find garbage, I pick it up and shove it in my backpack and take that wherever I'm going. That's one way to help sort of minimize some of the, loving our wild spaces to death. But I think there's a lot to be said for us getting outdoors in the natural environment, testing our own sort of senses, the heightened sense and awareness from what our norms are, and really plugging into more natural rhythms versus the, punch card 9-to-5 kind of a thing. So that's one thing I think is really valuable about being outdoors, is just being attuned to different rhythms of life. We are not set apart from the natural world. We are a part of the natural world.
And it sounds like you and Tony shared some great experiences together exploring outside.
And we were good friends already, but that helps cement it even more, especially when you share amazing, hard, physically taxing, beautiful area things together. Those experiences can really cement relationships with each other and with the natural world. So what a more beautiful way to do that than sharing nature with a friend. I love hiking. I love being outdoors. Yeah. Thanks for the interview, Ryan. Thanks for the questions and the time and reaching out. I appreciate it.